if you think we're on the run.
Hello, hello, and welcome to episode 54 of the Dad's Army podcast. This is our 2010 Christmas special, and it's going to be a commentary episode on The Love of Three Oranges. And I'm going to be joined, as always, by Oliver, and also this time by Paul Carpenter from the Dad's Army Appreciation Society. So this particular commentary might actually be a bit informed, as opposed to me and Oliver very slowly getting drunk and just talking about our favourite TV programme. Anyway, before we get into the commentary, just a couple of pieces of housekeeping, if you like. This is going to be the first of two Dad's Army podcast Christmas specials this year. You're going to have another podcast hit the feed in a couple of weeks' time. And I have to say, that's a very, very special podcast indeed. You'll be crazy to miss it. So make sure you check back in a couple of weeks' time and you'll hear something just a little bit different. In January, we're going to have a feedback episode. You've been very busy again sending in your thoughts and your comments. And of course, we didn't actually get through all of your emails last time we had a feedback episode. So we'll be going through the bulging mailbag once again in January. You've still got some time before we record that episode, so you can still get your feedback in. James@dadsarmypodcast.com or Oliver@dadsarmypodcast.com, and we'll go through your messages in January. In February, there will be the long-awaited Lance Corporal Jones episode. That will be an episode focusing exclusively on our favourite Lance Corporal. So feel free to make your voice heard about that particular subject. Same email addresses, James@dadsarmypodcast or Oliver@dadsarmypodcast. Without any further ado, let's get straight into the commentary. Again, very familiar setup for regular listeners by now. In a moment, you'll hear a countdown. You'll hear 3, 2, 1, play. And when you hear play, hit play on your DVD player or on your computer, however it is you're choosing to watch this particular episode. And you'll be more or less in sync with Oliver, Paul and I as we watch this episode and talked all the way through it purely for your entertainment. Don't forget to check back in a couple of weeks for that very special podcast, and we'll speak to you again very soon.
This is Bill Pertwee and you're listening to the Dad's Army podcast.
Three, two, one, play.
Hello and welcome to episode 54 of the Dad's Army podcast. A Merry Christmas to you all.
Merry Christmas.
What a special lineup we have today, because James and I are back and we're joined with a very special guest. A guru of Dad's Army. We've got Paul Carpenter of the Dad's Army Appreciation Society with us today. Hello, Paul.
Hello and a Merry Christmas to all our listeners.
Hello, yes, wonderful to be back again. It's really weird when we do Christmas specials, guys, because there isn't an obviously Christmassy episode to do a commentary on. So we done turkey dinner last year because turkeys are vaguely associated with Christmas in some way. With Easter or Thanksgiving, I suppose, if you're American. So, but no, why have we gone for The Love of Three Oranges then this time?
Well, I believe it was a Christmas special and it was the only episode to be made in 1976. The reason being is that, what you may know, is they are on tour with the stage show. So this is the only one ever made, and it was actually recorded in December.
So was this the first episode then in over a year that they actually recorded? So,
yeah,
you know, they hadn't.
Yeah, in fact, over a year. The last one was made 75, I think. And it's all studio bound because obviously they used to film on location in May. Of course, they were on tour then, so this is a studio-bound episode.
Mm-hmm. Now, we have Manor in camouflage, snow camouflage, which is not particularly pertinent to this story, as far as I recall.
No, not really. They could have mentioned it was winter or something, I suppose, for the reason... Well, it would have been summer, couldn't it? It's been prepared, I suppose. Really, but I think it gives it a Christmassy-type feel, anyway, with the snow and... And a general feel of it right at the beginning like this.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. It must have been interesting when they were costuming this particular episode, everyone in white.
To me, it stretches things a little bit too much because you're clearly able to see Godfrey and Fraser in their slightly ridiculous outfits, but then it's the whole, what is this? It's not quite as subtle as some of the other ones where, like, Godfrey's holding a very posh walking stick or something, he's wearing slippers, you know. I think this is stretching it a tad bit too much. I think it's making a bit of a fool of Mannering more so than is necessary, but it's still a funny gag, you know, visually. Yeah.
I'm not sure about more than necessary. I think certainly more than usual.
Yeah.
And I think you're right. It's the same joke that they've played in the past, but stretched. No question to that. But for some reason, and I can't really say why, I find this scene very, very funny. Particularly Fraser in a wedding dress. There's just something totally wrong about that. It's just not right.
It belongs in a different programme, really.
Yes.
I find it quite interesting you mentioning that. Look at the actors in the background. They're all very similar to each other, aren't they?
Yes.
And they seem to get a bit forgotten, but they're all dressed up, aren't they? And yes. All have a hood. They all have a bit of something around their neck as well, so they've been properly costumed by somebody.
And I noticed someone in the background walking past the window.
Yes, I just did as well.
Yeah, I've never noticed that before. So, probably someone you know it. I'm like, that's good. Pikey gets some quite good gags in this episode.
Mm.
Now we've had a fair bit of discussion about this,
he has got a pronounced Birmingham accent in this as well. And that's probably due to his either stage work or something.
Possibly due to the fact that I found out yesterday...
We had a bit of feedback, didn't we?
Well, he's from Birmingham. So thank you to our listener who actually sent that. I mean, because I don't know if you've been listening along, Paul, but... we've had this conversation certainly
It's a global conversation, this one, isn't it?
It does seem to be, about Pike's accent. And I didn't realise that Ian Lavender was from Birmingham originally, and clearly, Oliver, you didn't know, because I'm sure you'd have mentioned that.
Yeah, no.
But the chap who made the recording, lots of little clips... From Pike, very clearly demonstrated that inflection, the Brummy inflection.
It got sort of more pronounced as the end came along.
Yeah.
Really, as it got older, I suppose.
Yeah.
And less of a stupid boy, but they had a bit of a comic accent, but I suppose it's a different accent, really, isn't it?
Now, what clown? Is that a Perio or Poirot? I can't remember what the name of the clown is. Perio clown.
Yeah. By gondolier.
How do they sort of explain? Did they say why is Wilson not wearing? Oh, yes, they did, because he didn't want to walk down with
him.
Silly, yeah.
And there's Sponge at the front there?
Yes, good old Colin, bless him.
Mm. And they're looking quite gnawed and not to stand up to him against the others, of course.
Was that the first time he got promotion to the front row?
No. He was pushed forward after the 10th series, after...
presumably Telfrin would have...
Right.
Series.
Yeah. Over here we have the Vicar.
Very
now,
smart front there.
Yeah, now that's a different costume. That is definitely a different costume, and I don't know whether or not that's because something went wrong during the 12 months since they were in a studio. I mean, he was still playing the Vicar in the stage play, but perhaps, again, that's a different set of robes. But this is a grey... set of clothes here he's got, and all of his waistcoat and his jacket when he's worn it in the past has been black, so this is definitely, I'm just wondering if this is the first time that we saw it. I mean given that Dad's Army only had another couple of years to run at this point, one year to run.
He's looking very spruce, isn't he, Frank? He's looking good.
He's
I noticed as I watched this the other day, his comb over is less refined in this particular story, but presumably because he's been acting doing something else in between. Well, obviously he's been doing a stage show, but Frank was obviously a busy chap doing plenty of other things.
Before we leave the snow scene, and say the snowmen or the white costumes, if you look at the DVD cover, you'll see Bill Pertwee's got a white costume as well, which he never did. So
that's
a pose. Now I like these committees because. But normally on TV committees, you normally get one end of the table completely bare of people. And all the Dad's Army ones, they always place two or three people with their backs to the audience, which is quite unusual. I know they don't say anything, but it adds a bit more realism.
Yeah, there's life in Warmington-on-Sea, you know. I've said in previous times, I like the idea that you believe in these characters, that they exist outside of the set, that they're off, you can imagine the, you know... the verger raiding the vicarage charity box and all these kind of stuff. And, you've
said this before, and I thought at the time you spent too much time thinking about this. What's Jonesy the Butcher doing when we don't see him on screen?
Coupons.
I wonder how many coupons he actually counts.
That's quite a costume Pamela's got on there. It's
a bit busy, isn't it?
Yeah.
But I think this is interesting for two reasons. One, I mean, when you think about when we've done commentaries in the past and we've talked about staples of episodes, we normally talk about an opening, which is a parade ground of some kind. Parade scene.
It's a lineup, basically.
And then on different episodes, we've talked about a committee scene. Now, this is the first episode we've seen in a long time, and one of the first two scenes have been things that have been fed to the audience
based in the hall many years.
Yeah, absolutely. So you got the parade followed directly by the committee. And this committee scene, and which is true with pretty much the whole episode here, you've got practically everybody in it.
Yeah.
Practically everyone.
And I just love this bit where he has to explain his dirty marks on the antimacassar.
His what? I missed that.
Well, yeah, he put his feet on the antimacassar, and that's what his pipe's moaning about.
Oh. Right,
domestic arguments at the committee table.
The undoing of you, that woman. Is this whole episode set in the hall? And do we have any other sets?
Well, no, that's it.
No, it's quite a...
The office, it's all based...
Yeah.
It's studio bound, certainly, but and the scenes are quite long.
Yeah.
It's a bit of a different kind of edit, and I know we're getting ahead of ourselves here, but when you get to the bazaar, they slowly fade out and slowly fade in again. I will point it out when it happens.
The same scenes,
yeah, that's right. Yeah. But they do it slowly. They fade out rather than cut.
Wipes, don't they?
I don't remember that.
Coming up. Yeah. But we'll say that.
Oh well. Yes. Okay.
You've wiped.
What's a wipe to someone who's?
So rather than the traditional fade to black in an episode, they actually have like a square outline shooting from the centre, and then fills the screen. So it's like two images within one, and one becomes sort of crops the other, like they do with Star Wars.
Star Wars, absolutely.
Wars is sort of a favourite.
And the reason to do that, presumably, certainly within Dad's Army, is to have a way of moving between time zones, but within the same set.
This is what I was going to mention to you guys, because I think this is the only episode. Traditionally, obviously, you do the fade to black, but also there's no music in this episode. There's none of the songs. And so, as time progresses, there's no fade to blacks. There's none of the wartime music. There's nothing, and it's quite in a way. When I was watching it, and later on in the episode, you know, we obviously have the fate and everyone there. It hammers its way through quite a long. It doesn't really give the audience much time to breathe or think. It's quite an unusual edit, and I'm not sure whether.
Well, maybe they tried to crop down the time. I mean, they probably tried to get it down to 30 minutes.
Yeah.
But couldn't. And they tried to cut more and more out, but even Lincoln music can take a little bit of time out of it as well.
This is the shortest, though, of the three Christmas specials, isn't it? Is it 35 or 40 minutes?
Yeah, probably when they show it, they crop even more. Telling when I do it again.
Yeah, well, that's something I've actually realised a lot more of late, since I've been quite involved in fandom, if you like, Dad's Army fandom, and that's that you very rarely get the original edit go out on TV or even on the discs. And I know certainly Battle of the Giants, the other Christmas special, has got a couple of scenes cut from it, despite them restoring a couple of the sheep scenes.
It's a little effort to restore them, and they don't show them at all. But that's because of the leading up to programmes, the advertiser, even on BBC, for programmes to come, is getting longer and longer. So they have to cut the programmes down to fit, basically, which is a shame.
I like Eric Longworth, obviously. He had his fleshings line previously, and there he did a very nice puff pastry. He obviously found nice little gems of dialogue and thought, I can make that stand out.
Oh, this is a lovely bit here. Let's all club together and send them Mrs. Fox.
That is quite good.
Yeah.
I've got to say, that is quite good. And it is actually probably one of the very few examples of Pipe being quite cheeky for him.
Yeah.
I mean, he's cheeky in a lot of his throwaway lines, but he's never usually that close to the to the mark.
And everyone's gone in, haven't they?
They might have a go
again. Yeah, yeah. The Verge is going for it.
There
is the music.
There we are.
Well, it's in this scene then that they, in all the transitions, it rather than black out.
That looks disgusting, doesn't it?
Well, I've never liked Jones anyway. So. Oh, you mean the brawl? No, oh, right. Boom, boom. No, not really. What precisely is that? I mean, brawn is fat, is it not?
Basically, brawn is
with a few herbs.
Skinned fat. I think it's not even fat.
Leftover
fat jelly,
jelly
from the meat. Really,
it doesn't look particularly appetising or much of a treat, does it?
You see it there hovering on top.
Yeah. I suppose in wartime that was a delicacy of some kind.
Well, presumably it wasn't rationed, and clearly, in order to give it a to give it away as a raffle prize or a Tombola prize or whatever it was, then it must have been a treat. And I've certainly heard brawn mentioned in the past as something that was not on the ration and was good to have in wartime. Now, is this the Elderberry wine of some kind?
It's Joan Cooper there.
Is this her first appearance as Godfrey's sister?
Yeah, because this is directly before the last season, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, this is... we had Wake Up Warmington that followed this. So.
That's marvellous, isn't it?
Barry doesn't like this, does he, at all? He's sophisticated.
What he really wants, obviously, is to appreciate it in precisely the same way that Wilson does. He just doesn't know how.
Gold dust from Joel.
Mm-hmm.
It's these little moments that, to me, you know, some of the episodes can be formulaic and unbelievable, but it's those little moments to me that just stand out and always make it.
Well, your favourite character, is that correct to say it's Wilson, or is it just John LeMessurier's portrayal?
John LeMessurier makes me laugh the most with the way he does it. You know, I think all the characters are marvellous, but to me, Wilson makes me laugh the most.
This is one of my favourite scenes throughout all of Dad's Army.
Yeah.
And when we reviewed this particular episode rather than did a commentary on it a couple of years ago, the clip that I used to lead in with was the part where they're talking about the silhouettes, and you are a round blob, I think Fraser says, and as I said, I don't want to quote loads of dialogue on a commentary, but it is one of the funniest lines, and the reason why it's so hilarious is because they're out of uniform, and therefore Manorin has no authority over Fraser,
that's right.
And Fraser therefore completely lets rip. I think that is incredibly funny, you have to say.
It's a little bit lightened, doesn't it?
And this is where we mustn't get carried away with watching the episodes.
No. Watching the people in the background as well. They're all playing their part and quietly talking and everything. All the rest of the platoon all dressed up in suits.
Yeah. What is interesting about the silhouetting? Well, first of all, it's a talent that, of course, we never would have attributed to Fraser at all.
No.
And secondly, all of the other silhouettes that he's got on his background are actually very good.
Yes, yeah.
And then he does a snowman for for Manorin. And Bill, but this is the Unholy Trinity again, who, you know, I look for scenes with these three now out of the regular cast, and there came a point, and I'm not quite sure when, you may know, Paul. There came a point when they did actually start having these scenes deliberately with just the three, because they could sustain a small scene between them without relying on any of the regular ensemble. And
this is another one of the Wilson Manorin chats, and watch Manorin's right hand when he's obviously not just now, when he's describing what happened to his bath with Mrs. Manorin in it. I just love that little bit. It's only a tiny bit, but it comes up later on in the second, so watch out for that.
I have no idea how these two actors managed to keep a straight face through these kind of scenes, and I think Wilson or LeMessurier has it easier because his character does actually laugh. He's supposed to laugh.
Yeah.
Whereas Arthur Lowe is telling a quite frankly ludicrous story, an incredibly straight face. And I know that's what acting's all about, but for me, it's a wonderful talent. Yeah. A wonderful talent.
He's not amused,
is he? No. And of course, these kind of scenes would have been alien to them, really, because they didn't have any kind of close, intimate scenes on stage.
No.
When they toured the stage play, so this is the first time in a very long time. In fact, the very last episode that actually went out prior to this was the other Christmas special, was it not? It was the My Brother and I episode.
Yeah, but that was filmed as part of the series 8, I think.
Mm-hmm.
It was filmed within there. There we go, look, his hand.
Was this popular viewing figures wise, this episode? Was it dummy?
Well, it's always interesting when you start talking about viewing figures today for programmes years and years ago, because they're not immediately comparable. I mean, I think this was 13 point something or other million viewers, but that wasn't extraordinary, was it?
No,
in those days.
I mean, I've just wondered whether anyone was aware of it, you know, to think a year later it would have been sort of finishing up and all over. You know, I wonder if it was a conscious thing at the time. They've just done a tour, you know.
I reckon they must have been thinking about it for a while, because you think about when the actual idea came about in 69, is when they transmitted the first series. 69, that's right, isn't it? 68. Oh, fundamental flaw there. Schoolboy era. But when you think about it at the time, the idea they pitched was a whole bunch of old people. You know, if anyone had said at the time, yeah, 9 years from now, you'll be thinking about winding it up, I think they'd have been absolutely gobsmacked.
Mm, yeah.
So I think, yes, I reckon the end of Dad's Army must have been in the BBC's minds ever since it started.
Well, certainly this is before John Lemaire's was ill.
Yeah.
I mean, he's got some colour and he's looking very well there.
Yeah, agreed.
Obviously,
yeah.
If you compare him there to the last series, where he's very drawn. And
yeah.
It's a shame. So this is really the last one where you see them at their, I'll say their best, but at their normal.
Yeah, they're recognised as normal.
I'm not sure. I still think the season after that, you get to see really rounded characters. I think you're right with John the Measurer, because clearly he does look very ill, he's very gaunt, very drawn, etc. But the other characters, I think, are as strong as ever in Series 9.
I think they're a lot slower.
It's quite possible that they were slower.
Ian comes into his own in the last series.
Where they got these kind of ideas from, I've no idea. Mrs. Mm-hmm. Manorin, who we never see, suddenly has a hobby. No, that's Lord of the Rings. Suddenly has a hobby of making novelty light shows.
Yeah.
I was about to say hats,
somebody,
but that's quite
obscure.
Yeah, well, how about playing cards?
Oh, on her own, he's never there, is he? He's not playing soldiers.
She
My
has
mother
a,
might be there.
Mash,
has a tendency mash. For bismuth. That's another very popular pastime, I would imagine. But I just find it's I just find it's interesting when they say, "Well, let's give her a bit of a bizarre."
There we go. Placement there.
A little bit like a Roman hat there.
There we go. And there we go.
And this is another example, Oliver, of the thing you mentioned right at the top of this program. It's a visual piece of comedy that's stretched. And the reason being is that you do not hold a lampshade on someone's head for more than you...
Well,
as soon as you realise it, you go,
oh. I always found that lampshades you never bought.
Yeah, this is
I completely agree.
Yeah, necessary.
So, but that was there purely to stretch a comedic moment.
It's not a particularly Jones-heavy episode, it's really, is it? Other than running around with the brawn, he doesn't have an awful lot to do.
That's true.
Well, I think it's evenly paced, because they got a lot of Bill in it, got quite a bit of Eric Longworth as well.
So,
spread it around. It's only an extra 5 minutes.
Yes, yeah.
I'm not sure. Now that you mention it, I think I do notice his absence, but at the same time, you know, all of the characters only have fleeting scenes here and there throughout the episode, so whether or not it's any more or less, I don't know.
Just,
but he's not a pivotal character in this.
Just think how funny it would have been with Walker.
Absolutely. I mean, he'd have been lovely. He'd have been taking the free wine and selling it to people in the street, probably, you know.
And what's the rules come in?
I wonder whether that's the same coal thingamajig that Pike used for his loud hailer in episode 1. The man in the hour.
Cool.
Although that was based in the bank, wasn't it?
It was, yeah.
And that was some kind of improvised. Yeah, well, that still looks like a coal thingy, doesn't it? To a degree.
Coal's arrived.
Yes.
He gives him a bit of a whack in a minute, doesn't he, Arthur? He gives Ian quite a whack.
Yeah. I think Pike's character here is unrecognisable from the first 3 series, really.
He
completely changed. It's good.
They like I was saying before, I think that
Ian Lavender. That's the white pole was referring to. Yeah. So it's just a different way of moving things along. Time
as opposed to, and probably cheaper.
Yeah. Well, because presumably using those wartime songs, it must have had to pay for the use of them.
I presume.
Don't know. I imagine they would have done. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's probably a cheaper. Yeah. Cheaper way of moving things along, but of course they're all still in the same place. It's not like you're going down.
Yes,
it's not like the audience going to say, "Okay, we're going to stop recording now, everyone." You know, they could have just, you know, very, well, presumably there was a bit of that. This is a nice sort of random addition. I think.
Well, the drink. Oh, yeah. And another
reference of Frank's the vicar's.
This is the happiest you will ever see that vicar.
Yeah.
Now, I've said in the past that's a right miserable vicar, but I've never seen him happier than when he's got a drink in his hands.
Yeah.
I don't know how many times they escort that brawn in and out. Do you know, this is another, I'm beginning to realise this as I'm watching it with you two guys here, it is similar again to the format used by Fawlty Towers. Starts off fairly sedate at the beginning, and when you get to the end of the episode, it's absolute chaos.
Yeah.
And it picks up in pace. And now you look at this, everyone's drunk, and this is actually picking up a little bit in terms of how fast.
My brother and I was a bit like that, wasn't it? At the end, we were trying to get rid of his brother.
Yes. Yes, very much so.
Situation, it was a gathering in the church.
The Fawlty Towers had only recently come out the year before this, so maybe it had some kind of influence.
It's quite possible.
Or they were just trying to move. Because I do find it extraordinary. I mean, they obviously thought, okay, we're going to do a Christmas special, we can only use one set, what we're going to do?
They've crammed them into it, haven't they?
Yeah, they have, absolutely. And changing the sort of the normal way of doing it. But yeah, I'd take your point there, sort of throwing everything in, all the chaos.
I know it's done for comedic effect, but when you watch a programme a lot, as I do, I really would much rather dwell on the less manic parts.
Mm.
You know, they're the parts that I enjoy the most, but I understand why they do it like this completely, but because the characters get a little bit lost sometimes.
Absolutely.
They descend into a little bit of caricatures. In the same way Fawlty Towers did, you'd have Basil Fawlty ranting like a complete loon at the end.
If it's a heavy bike, why hasn't it gone right to the bottom?
That was precisely the point that I made when we reviewed this many, many years ago. Three or four years ago.
It's obviously not... Well, is it warming?
Another wipe there for you.
Mm. Mrs. Pike, obviously... this as well, but again, very much a visual presence, the same as the Verger, really, as opposed to any dialogue.
He goes grossing everybody up again.
Yeah.
Mm.
He's a right.
A lot of people watching the main actors in the background, which is unusual, but I suppose if they're doing something, you would tend to watch them, wouldn't you?
I guess. I mean, I have to admit, I hadn't noticed that.
I suppose it focuses everyone's attention, you know, if they're all looking at the front, we are too. This is probably my favourite. I love what Arthur does with it.
Yes.
He presumably doesn't want anyone else to see the fact he's bidding. So it's a wonderful
support. Why did you sell it so quickly, for goodness sake? One shilling, that's not going to get much, is it, for him?
No, but the intention here is not to raise money in Hodges' mind, is it? It's to keep it away from Manor End.
It just seems, why sell it so quickly when...
It's interesting, this auction, because the whole premise around this, although it's clearly a comedy once again, it's grounded in a very serious situation, because the reason why they're auctioning three oranges is because they're so scarce. Now, the three of us will not be able to even remotely appreciate what it's like not being able to get an orange if we were particularly... And that, as I said, I think if you look for it, and sometimes you only have to look for it for a little while and you can see it quite clearly... is behind every one of these episodes. It's all grounded in reality of war.
Yes.
And derived from that situation, you get the comedic reactions. And this is why there are so many layers in Dad's Army.
People would watch this, and why are they all... What's so special about an orange? I'll bag.
Yeah.
And if it prompts kids, I think, to say, well, why are they trying to buy an orange in the same way they do on, I don't know, Bargain Hunt or whatever happens to be on, you know, mid-morning on BBC One.
They'd say, what's the shilling, wouldn't they? So.
Yeah.
I think Bill shines in this scene. I think this is ideal Hodges time.
You're right.
Hodges to the Barrow stuff.
Yeah, well, I mean, Hodges to me is a character. Sometimes he works, sometimes he doesn't quite work. He becomes a bit too over the top. I'm having one of my funny turns. I don't really get that. I think this is when he really shines.
It's a very good point. And the reason why, we talked about it a little bit in the My British Buddy commentary.
Another episode where he works.
Yeah, because he's at home in a pub.
You
know, the character of Hodges is in a pub. And now he's in a market stall, more or less. And therefore it's his home. It's his home. Absolutely right. And it fits his character perfectly. And the penny suddenly drops, or the shilling suddenly drops there, and I think it's just the way it's articulated. You had the joke, and now they're getting another laugh at the same thing by saying, "Well, I've been bidding against myself." So,
yes,
that's quite clever writing as well. Absolutely. To make the same thing funny twice.
It's a good gag.
Yeah,
and then getting everyone.
That gentleman that was just behind Fraser. He was in the white feather one. In the restaurant.
Oh, right, Two and a Half Feathers.
Yeah, it was in the table next to them.
Just recognising. Oh, yeah. Well. There you go. This is just shows you, again, you notice these things all the time when you watch Dad's Army.
One word line.
How does that go, Paul?
Orange.
Orange. So,
well.
And it took me a little while to realise, after I'd seen this many, many years ago when I was quite young, that there were actually two different kinds of orange, so I didn't appreciate the fact that it wouldn't be really tasty. Orange. Yeah. What are they called? Is it marmalade or cooking oranges or something?
Marmalade. I don't know. Marmalade, I think, because
I know they're called something slightly different. Now, 10 shillings in today's money, what would that be, I wonder? Money. 10 quid or something, perhaps? I don't know.
It wasn't actually an orange, it looked more like a tangerine.
Especially if you're dividing into segments like that, yes. But I suppose for the love of three tangerines, doesn't really have the same ring to it. Yes, marmalade. And then you get the
scripted.
I doubt it, to be honest with you. I doubt it. So all in all, what did you think then, guys? That went very quickly for us talking about it. Good episode?
Longer. Yeah, well, it's crammed, that episode.
Yeah. I don't think it's a classic, but at the same time, I think, to me, it's running out of a bit of steam. I think it's funny in some places, but in others, I think it doesn't have the normal balance of episodes.
No, it goes very quickly.
It does, yeah. They pack a lot in, they get all the characters get some kind of
gag. They all have a fair bit of acting, but everyone has a fair bit, don't they?
I think what you say is right, really. It's when you tune in for a Christmas special, you want to know what you're getting.
Mm.
And you get a lot of the stereotypical character traits within that story. I think it's probably the weakest of the three Christmas specials, in my view. But it is one that I can watch again, as I said, just for the silhouette scene. So, anyway, we've come to the end of that episode, so thanks very much for listening. Thanks, Paul, for joining us once again.
Pleasure. Do it again sometime.
And please do let us know if you have any feedback. Do you think it was the worst of Christmas specials? Let us know.
The least best.
Right into James at dadsarmypodcast.com or Oliver at dadsarmypodcast.com or forward us, follow us on Twitter even. Twitter.com/DadsArmyPodcast or Twitter.com/OliverCrocker. See you next time.